Here's some Stoke FM news for Wednesday, May 17th, 2023. I'm Megan Dooling. Forecasters expect this unseasonably hot weather to continue until early next week. The province is banning people from burning piles and grass across BC starting tomorrow as a response to increasingly dry conditions. Cliff Chapman is the director of wildfire operations for the BC Wildfire Services.
I just think it's important for everyone to know that the fuel conditions being what they are and the weather being what it is going to be challenging suppression efforts across the province for us, in particular in the north. But as the heat wave continues through this week, we're going to start to see the hazard increase in the south as well.
The 10-year average for wildfires in BC to date is 162. We're currently at 206. Most of them are in the Peace region. Chapman spoke yesterday from the Kamloops Fire Center after 330 newly hired firefighters finished a boot camp.
Just quickly on the weather, we're living in it right now. Obviously, as we stand here in Kamloops, it's going to get to 30, 35 degrees today. In the northeast, we're seeing that ridge, the ridge of high pressure that's built in over Alberta, BC, and Saskatchewan has stabilized. It's going to sit over us for the next 2 or 3 days. We're going to see temperature records being broken likely across the province, in particular in the north, but across the province. And we're seeing drying of our fuels everywhere. What that means for BC is that, yes, the fire hazard is significant and extreme in the northeast of the province. Slowly but surely through the week, we're seeing that hazard increase all the way down to the south with the U.S. border and including the Coastal Fire Center.
Forecasters expect this ridge of high pressure to break on holiday Monday of the May long weekend and for temperatures to return to seasonal. The problem is a break in high pressure comes with wind and thunderstorms.
And so what that means for BC is that we have a high likelihood of seeing fire starts really across the province if that lightning, depending on where that lightning tracks, if it shows up on holiday Monday. So that's something for the public in BC, really all residents of BC, to ensure they're paying attention to that weather as they're out in the backcountry. As they see smoke, report it. You can report fires through our mobile app. You can call us at *555 on your cell phone. Please report any smoke that you see.
Stephen Hood is a wildfire technician in the Columbia Fire Zone. He's based out of the primary attack fire base at the Revelstoke Airport.
If we're talking campfires, right, size should be limited to that of a campfire, you know, less than a meter by a meter.
Hood emailed after. He meant to say half a meter by half a meter.
There's things you need to have. You need to have a hand tool on site. You need to have 8 liters of water to be able to extinguish your fire. You need to have a fire break. So there's simple ways that you can safely have a fire. You shouldn't be burning if there's a lot of wind. And if a lot of wind starts to happen, which inevitably it catches us by surprise sometimes, put your fire out and don't take chances, right? Right now, with the fire load that we have up north, and the demands on us for floods as well, and Alberta would love some help. It's, you know, they'd love for us to come and help them so badly right now. But we're being cautious. We know that it's dry in the province, and we're not sending more than what we feel we can to support our neighbors. The last thing we need in times like this is more fires that could have been prevented.
The 330 firefighter recruits that just finished training at the Kamloops Fire Base, that's 130 more new hires than in years past. BC is spending mega money on disaster mitigation. Bruce Ralston is the Minister of Forests. He said this is the government's direct response to the anticipated effects of climate change, more intense fires, and longer fire seasons. BC Wildfire Services also hired 113 full-time staff this winter for what they call preparedness and response efforts. In Revelstoke, BC Wildfire is a big employer. There are about 75 staff working from here. The changes coming out of Victoria are translating into the Ministry of Forests building a new fire base by the airport.
This is a response to the province transitioning BC Wildfire. We're not moving away from wildfire. That is our core business. But we are a provincial response agency, and we've been tasked with responding to floods more so over the years. It's allowing us to increase our staffing and allow for staffing to work full time year round to be able to respond to these natural disaster events, as well as support our neighbors. And that could be in the Southern Hemisphere even throughout the winter. So we're looking at a staffing uplift, and as well, we're looking at a facilities uplift.
And let's go back to this fire base that's being built. Do you know what it will look like, how it will be used, and when it will be finished?
No. We have a pretty good sense of what we'd like it to look like. We're still working through the final details of that. We have 7 people who live in Revelstoke who don't work for the zone, but they do work for BC Wildfire Service. And some of them have an office space over at the district in the Big Eddy, and some of them have an office space at home. Because some of these new positions have been created, and Revelstoke's a pretty desirable place to live. We want to provide them with suitable places to come to work, and so our new facility is going to be built with the future in mind. We are an expanding organization. We want to make sure that we can put everybody under the same roof. It's so great to have everyone come to the office and have those chats, informal and formal. So I think we're probably a couple of years out from having this concept become a reality. And I know that a lot of us who've been here for a long time are really looking forward to that.
What will the staffing increase look like here?
We're changing the configuration of our initial attack crews and our unit crews. We're adding an additional person onto each initial attack crew. So previously it was 3 people, now it's moving to 4. Our unit crews have increased in numbers from 20 to 22 people. And those are subtle changes, but they make a really big difference in the way that we're able to respond to fires. And it also allows people to manage their work-life balance. As our summers get busier and our demands are increasing, the intensity of the work is changing. We need to be able to make sure that people are getting the rest that they need, maybe attend a wedding once in a while, experience what summer is. And so that's just on the local scale. We're also increasing our officer capacity. We're adding an additional wildfire technician who's a full-time employee, and increasing some other positions in the fire center, which is located down in Castlegar, just sort of the support structure that exists down there that lends a hand to the zones throughout the year.
Can you describe a little bit more about, like, just the nuts and bolts of how these changes will affect operations?
Sure. Simply speaking, from an initial attack crew who used to be 3 and is now 4, one of our regulations is that you need to have 3 people on site before you can begin running chainsaw. Running a chainsaw is a huge part of putting out fires for us, especially in the Columbia Fire Zone. So we're just making it easier for people to do their job and be supported from a safety perspective. Then if you were to look at the unit crews going from 20 to 22, that allows for the crew supervisor or potentially other people on the crew, when they arrive on an incident, sometimes they, based on their certifications and qualifications, can be used in other capacities to support that incident depending on the needs of the incident. This would allow for additional experience to be gained and capacity, and then for career development opportunities that they were previously more attached to their crew and they weren't able to be sort of pulled away to be used in maybe a better way. So it just makes it more flexible. It means that we could be more dynamic as an organization and use the people for their skill sets and experience a little bit more fluidly.
You mentioned responding to floods maybe in the Southern Hemisphere in the winter. That could be, but what else will the crews be doing when they're working full year if it's not responding to something else? Is it paperwork and desk work?
I'm sure that they would not be jazzed to hear that that might be an option, but they didn't get hired on for that purpose. But training in the shoulder season is something that we are struggling at this point to fit in. Our shoulder seasons have become fire seasons or flood seasons. And so we have people currently who are just returning from training and they have been unavailable because at this time of the year, normally this is our training season. And the province would love to have them available right now to go out and respond to these floods and fires and lend a hand. So by extending their time at work, we could become more flexible to put the training in the slower times and then be better set up for success so that if we do experience a May like this one, which happens every now and again, that we can have more resources available to respond.
Can we just go super basic? Because I know it's your life and what you do, but for people who are curious, how do you respond to fires here? What's the order that things are done?
If we want to take it right down to the local level, we have 5 initial attack crews that are based in Revelstoke. They serve the whole Columbia Fire Zone, which includes Golden and all the way up to sort of Mica, Kinbasket area. And they operate on a bit of a rotational basis, depending on the hazard out there, and we call it the indices, how dry it is out in the forest as measured by our weather stations. We have anywhere from 1 to 5 crews on alerts or standby, and they would be dispatched to fire in order of priority of what kind of resources we're trying to protect with each individual incident. They could be out there for a night or two. They have provisions to be able to be self-sufficient out there, and then they'd come back and restock and be sort of moved to that next incident in order of priority. They could do that for up to 14 days before they require 4 days of rest. That would be no different than our unit crews, which are a bit more of a provincial resource. The initial attack crews tend to be prioritized to the zone first and then to the province second. The unit crews would be able to be deployed anywhere in the province, kind of like initial attack at moment's notice, but we tend to have some heads up on these things. And then they would just drive to wherever they're needed, check in and be deployed to an incident. Again, they have 14 days of work on a fire before they require some rest, same as initial attack.
So there's the initial attack and then unit crews, and then there's also auxiliary in the summertime too, people on call?
Those auxiliaries are part of those crews.
Okay.
Yeah, and we rely very much on our contract community. So people that, other companies that would exist to augment our personnel when we have enough fire load that we, exceed what our internal capacity is, we just call upon the contract community. They're maybe involved in other silviculture and forestry operations when they're not engaged with us. And that allows us to expand our workforce to take care of larger incidents or incidents that are going to last for a long time.
And we were talking, you have a beautiful map in the office of the fire region, and you were talking about how just the nature of our Columbia region here. Do you want to talk a little bit about how it compares to other regions and what it's like to respond to fires here?
Sure. Well, first I'll tell you from my experience on the initial attack crews that responding to a fire here is one of the most incredible experiences of my life. When I take off at the airport in a helicopter and fly up to Mica, that flight is absolutely spectacular, and it's a real bonus of the job. And then when you arrive, it's somewhere on the hillside, very limited road access, so you're quite isolated out there. But the helicopter, with the use of the helicopter, we're able to get our people on the ground, and it's pretty steep, rugged terrain, and the wood around here, the trees are big. It's not easy, to learn to become a faller in this kind of fuel type is a lot of overcoming some scary big cedars and hemlocks. But it's incredibly rewarding. It's a friend of mine describes it as heli hiking with your friends and chainsaws, which is really people would pay to come and do this. But luckily for us, we're on the opposite side and getting paid. Spectacular landscape, but difficult. We get very comfortable in this landscape, and sometimes we do import crews from other zones who are not accustomed to working in the mountains and the steep ground and the big wood. And like we would be a bit of fish out of water sometimes working in other zones that are maybe having more flat, rolly terrain with more of a grasses fuel type. And you have to work within the capabilities of your training and experience. And that's really emphasized to our crews is stay within your comfort level. And we have different ways of defining and measuring comfort levels, especially when it comes to falling trees. So, it's a complicated zone up here that we work in. There's limited road access. All the mountains create challenges with communications. The most complex repeater network in the province to be able to ensure that when our crews are out there, they have good communications back to the zone and dispatch, and that's safety coverage, but also for updates and resource requests and all that.
How long have you worked here in Revelstoke doing, or in what, for what BC Wildfire Services?
It's been 15 years for me. Started here in 2008 and watched the town sort of evolved into what it is and where it's going. It's been really amazing. I was living in the Okanagan and I thought, well, I should continue working in the Okanagan if I'm going to get into the wildfire business because there's tons of fires over there. And I went to our boot camp, and then out of boot camp, they offered me a position in Revelstoke, which wasn't even on my radar at the time. But obviously, after the first summer of working here, I was hooked. And at the time, I was also ski patrolling and managed to make sense out of my life and get a job up here at the mountain ski patrolling. So my summers and winters were all taken care of. And 2 years later, bought a house and started raising a family.
And it's such an interesting evolution of time between 2008 and now, and kind of how we talk about climate change, the effect that climate change is having on us, how the government's responding to it, and just the intensity of fires and floods like you were talking about, and especially the last couple of years, just weather, unpredictable, dangerous weather. Do you want to talk a little bit about the changes that you've seen in those years?
It's hard to know, I think, with any definitive yes, no, this is what we're experiencing. It's pretty clear to me in wildfire that our seasons are changing. I don't necessarily want to put a figure on that, but, you know, I've experienced some pretty intense fire seasons over the last, particularly over the last 5 years. And, you know, here we are sitting in May talking about unseasonal conditions. And it seems like that becomes, when you say unseasonal and irregular enough, you have to stop and ask yourself, is this not the norm or is this the norm? And I think, you know, probably the jury is still a little bit out on that, but we know that we're responding to more intense fires, fires that are impacting communities, whether it be, you know, a fire on the doorstep or just the smoke, which affects many more people. And of course the floods. So I think things are changing. Yeah.
Cliff Chapman in Kamloops.
It's not abnormal for us to have a spring fire season. We have had fire seasons actually in the Peace Country, in the Prince George Fire Center. I believe it was 2015 where we saw something very similar unfold. And I will reference back to that fire season because after we saw the spring fire season, we actually had a fairly average summer. And so there's nothing that I've seen to date. I mean, obviously we're breaking temperature records right now. So I would say that's abnormal. But given what we've seen across BC in the last decade, in particular in the last 5 years, I guess to be candid, I'm not surprised by much anymore. And that's why we have to turn to preparing for the worst. And ideally, the worst doesn't happen.
Everyone's saying the summer fire season depends on how much rain we get in June. So far, April and May have been drier than normal. Chapman is hoping for 200 millimeters of rain across the province over June, but he says he's not expecting that to happen. Reporting for Stoke FM in Revelstoke, I'm Megan Dooling.